everybody. Welcome to the Code Blue podcast, brought to you by Holly Blue, the very first and only social media app exclusively for nurses, created by nurses. So think of this as the community of nurses made just for you. With me is Brandon Belvo.
Getting better
from the Great White North, which is Canada, which I've never heard anyone say that before. But anyways.
I'm the only one, but that's
you
okay.
Yes. Today we're talking about clinical horror stories, and we're going to talk about some good, bad, and ugly.
Well, hold on a sec, because I'm the co-host, but we have with us the man himself, the host of this podcast.
Who is this?
Mike Linares.
Oh, yeah, that's me.
From SimpleNursing.com. How are you, Mike?
Hey, I'm doing pretty
great.
Great
to be here with you.
Yeah, so if you guys didn't know, I actually got failed out of nursing school my third semester during my clinical rotation.
This just got awkward.
Super awkward. Yeah. Anywho. Can we just wrap this up? No,
yeah.
So
that's all we have to talk about clinicals, because yeah, Mike didn't actually take
That's pretty much it.
Yeah. Tell us your story.
No, for the longest time, a lot of people was telling everyone I was a fake nurse because everyone just thought I failed out of nursing school and I never got back in. So today we're going to talk about clinical horror stories, as well as some tips and tricks of what you should do and don't do during clinicals at the end of this. Mm. So my horror story was, I was the worst student in the world. I was like chronically late. Well, to give you some context, here's what happened. I used to teach paramedics about EKGs. And I used to be I work on the ambulance for like 5 or 6 years before nursing. And so I was just really immature when I actually got into nursing, because I thought, like, you know, I had a chip on my shoulder. I was really cocky back then. And I was like, oh yeah, you know, I kind of know everything and the teacher should teach it this way. And so I was kind of chronically late and slacked off my first semester and didn't study as much as I should have. And a lot, you know, I'm not sure about in Canada, but at least where I was from in California, a lot of instructors like bullied the students, and they would just like, you know, just give us a reason to like write you up. Just like, right? Like, if you don't have like, you know, your scrubs pressed, like no wrinkles. Yeah, you need to have your shoes shined.
White shoes too?
No. Oh. I think black. No, they were white. Yeah, you're right.
You had to have white shoes?
No, yeah. Actually, I think it changed during my rotation. But it was crazy because like some instructors just wanted to write you up for no reason. I mean, not no reason, but it was just kind of like, you know, we want to make like militaristic, very like, you know, under your thumb kind of thing. And so I kind of got a bad name for myself my first semester, which kind of rolled over into the second semester because all these red flags of instructors are like, oh yeah, this guy doesn't want to be here, he doesn't even care, blah, blah, blah. And it's just that I didn't care about the system and jumping through the hoops.
Yeah.
So finally I make it to the third semester and it's like, you know, skating on thin ice. And we have this instructor that just looks at all the I think I had the most write-ups out of all the students. But it was like dumb stuff.
For what though?
Okay. So one, I did a 45-minute lunch instead of a 30-minute lunch, which apparently it wouldn't have been so bad because at the hospitals I used to work at as a tech at the time, it was 45-minute lunches.
Yeah.
And it wasn't 30 minutes. But they wouldn't have been as bad as my patient was crashing. But the other like nursing student we were supposed to hand off my second semester, they were supposed to like take a look at my patient for me.
Yeah.
And apparently there was like his glucose was going down, and the other nursing student kind of just was just there, and it was weird. So it was kind of weird.
That's yeah.
Yeah.
It's good to eat your lunch just a little bit slower too.
Yeah. You know what? Like I have digestive issues.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know. I'm on your side on that one, but punctuality is a good thing.
Yeah.
But that must have been tough. And then trying to somehow fix the image and move forward. I mean,
that's the hardest
part.
When
you feel like the people that are in control of the situation are not rooting for you,
how
do you continue to try and stay positive and move through that?
The coolest part is that my dean and my assistant dean were just really cool people.
Mm-hmm.
So after I kind of failed out, because think about this. You're going into your third semester, all these red flags, and then the instructor that we had, no one in the whole class was prepared. We didn't have enough time to prepare for our patients.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone was not prepared. I was the first one that got called, and I was the first one to send home on the first day of class. So I got failed out because they thought I was prepared to be forthcoming. And my dean kind of sat me down and was like, hey, we know you can finish this program. You just need to jump through the hoops, keep your head down. And here's a big tip.
Yeah.
Don't go on the radar, as they say, or don't try to make yourself stand out during clinicals, in a sense that don't try to act like you know everything or act like too cocky or basically kind of like, you know, do anything to bring attention to yourself. You always want to be on time, which we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Be overprepared.
Yeah.
But if there is a reason for someone to think that you're slacking, or if there's like a reason to basically not being on time or something they can pick on you, then that's kind of the bad thing. And I had all those things.
But not in the good way, because it's either if you give someone something to talk about, it's usually really good or not good. But.
Yeah. Well, for me, it was really bad.
Yeah.
So my dean was like, hey, we know you can do this. You can probably even teach some of these courses.
Yeah.
She's like, go do a project and show me that you really want this. So that's actually where I started Simple Nursing.
Yeah.
So it was during that time, I'm like, hey, I can do like a 14-day or 2-week boot camp for new nursing students, show them how to study, time manage.
Yeah.
And
that's crazy, because so in a weird way,
yeah.
Had you not been that student to begin with, maybe Simple Nursing would not be.
It wouldn't have existed. I can really tell you that. Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. So I love the fact that when you face adversity or challenge, like that's where you get creative and innovative and find a way to find success through that too. So that's an incredible story.
Yeah. They always say there's always two paths. Mm-hmm. Anytime you had adversity, you can get bitter or you can get better.
Mm-hmm.
And if you kind of find yourself getting bitter a lot, then you don't really kind of overcome and get better from the things that give you adversity. So just try to make your obstacle into something that makes you a little bit better.
Absolutely.
That's the idea.
Yeah.
Get stronger.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, man.
I love it. Wow, what a story.
Yeah, it's cool.
I think a lot of people would have been like,
that was a horror story
discouraged
turned into.
And
I know, imagine.
You like, okay, now I turn this into something successful and that's amazing, dude. Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Wow. You know, my clinicals, I didn't have experiences necessarily like that, but I had, you know, unique ones too. One of my clinical stories, but, you know, I remember what would always make me just a little bit nervous was like doing a skill for the first time and having your instructor right there and then your buddy nurse right there, and then your patient clearly knows something is up when you've got a student, your instructor, and your buddy nurse right there, and you're shaking your hands holding a catheter.
It's like a little like a noodle. Just
yeah. I remember the first time I had to do a Foley catheter, and being a guy, it's a little bit, you know.
On a female or male?
On a female.
Oh,
a female.
Okay.
So it's a little bit, you know.
Nerve-wracking.
It's nerve-wracking. It's nerve-wracking. So we were in a L&D rotation.
Okay.
And so mom had wanted an epidural. Obviously couldn't get up and walk around once the epidural was in. And
your legs don't work anymore.
Your legs don't work, yeah. So they said, we need a Foley catheter. I said, okay. My instructor said, all right, you know, I haven't seen you get one yet, or insert one. You know, can you do that? I said, okay, yep, sounds good. And so I quickly went and looked up the protocol again, make sure I had everything down pat. I'm like, I'm gonna get this. Like, this is gonna be good. But there was an audience. And I'm like, hey.
How many people do you think, 4 or 5?
6 or 7.
Oh my god.
The whole family was there too. And I was
like,
we're going to, my name is Brennan. I'm a student nurse from.
I'm a male student nurse
male
that's
student
gonna
nurse.
Put this tube in your wife's. Yeah.
And so I said, if you guys wanna step out for a sec, and being a male, I always have, and I would recommend this to all other males, if you're doing a very
invasive procedure inside the genitalia area,
another staff there with you.
You have to have,
have
sometimes hospital just say like, always females
always,
present. Yeah.
Always, yeah. And I think that is just the appropriate thing to do just for everyone's safety.
Oh yeah.
So I had my instructor, I had my buddy nurse, some of the family too, and I mentioned the family that, okay, this is what we're gonna do. Would you like to stay or would you like to go? And the family's like, we are going to stay. I'm like,
whoa.
Okay, great. And then the dad, or the husband, the future dad, 20 minutes later, was like, he looked at me and he said,
you better not F the, sorry.
That's what he said. He flexed on me though.
He said,
hey, Brennan, just so you know, I'm a urologist.
Don't F up.
I'm like, great, I got the urologist here, I got the instructor here, I got everyone here, and did I pick the right French?
And just in case, if you guys don't know what a urologist is, it's a doctor that specializes in urinary. So imagine this like nursing student with the whole crowd watching with the little shaking.
Yeah.
Fully.
So in my head, I'm like, well, if you're a urologist,
you want to just do this for me? Like, this is your wife.
Why don't I watch you do it?
Yeah. Maybe I can learn something.
Anyways, did it. Went great. And
really? Did it go good?
It went great.
Be honest.
I'll be honest. Not everything in my life has gone great.
Okay,
that was something that I was very thankful for, because it's like, When you have an audience, you wanna do really good. I ended up getting an A plus in that rotation, by the way.
Get out of here.
Yeah,
right.
I was the king of warm blankets
and sandwiches.
Getting everyone water and sandwiches and saying hi and being that friendly face. That's also a great tip for people to do as well in clinical. But that's the whole idea of it. But I think that what prepared me the most for that in a very, you know, overwhelming situation is just knowing the protocol, so I knew what I was doing, why we were doing it, because we were inserting the epidural, so mom wasn't going to be able to go up and walk to the bathroom anymore, and knew exactly, you know, what materials I needed. I had the support there, and I had seen another staff do it before, so I felt safe and confident in doing that skill too. So by virtue of having all those boxes checked off, of course it's going to be nerve-wracking your first time you ever do something like that, but you were able to take it and learn from it, and it ended up going really well too. So I think one of the biggest from that experience, one of the biggest do nots I would say is never perform a skill that you do not know what you're doing.
Oh yeah.
But you also have a point on that too. So if someone were to ask you to do a certain skill or give a medication and you don't know what that medication is or you don't know what that skill is, how would you respond?
Yeah, so the biggest thing is in my school we called the 5 W's, who, what, when, where, why.
Yeah.
So always know who you're doing it on, obviously, what you're doing, and really why you're doing it. Because a lot of students, it's not just giving a medication. It's not just giving or putting in a Foley or an NG tube or an IV. You want to know what the patient's there for. Why are we doing this? And obviously, with medication, that's a whole nother sidebar. You have to know like 7 different things, the mechanism of action, signs and symptoms, side effects and all that stuff. But the biggest thing is being overly prepared in your clinical rotations. And we're going to talk about some stuff about do's and don'ts. But one of the biggest things is that never say that you don't know something. Because an instructor doesn't want to hear that. You're there to learn. So always say I'll find out. Or always follow up with I'm not sure, but I'll find out and I'm going to get back to you.
Or I can't answer that question, but I'll find someone who can.
Or look it up.
Exactly. So always, if you don't have the answer yourself, it's still your responsibility to find that answer for someone.
Of course.
And for your patients too. So yeah, great piece of advice there. I think one of the biggest things in clinical was being punctual and showing up on time.
That was my problem. that's how you fail out. If you want to fail out.
you want to know how you really fail out? It's when you show up late and you're holding a Starbucks coffee and your hair is perfect and your scrubs aren't torn to pieces.
How do you know how I showed up to my
We'll talk about that later. I would recommend that if you're going to be late, obviously you call the unit, you call your instructor, you say, hey, you know what, I'm caught in traffic. You want to get there safely, but just be honest with them. But do not show up late with Starbucks or something like that.
Especially your first impression with the new instructor. The biggest thing is I know our rotations were 12 weeks because we'd split up the semester.
So we would do a semester of theory,
okay,
and then second semester was all clinicals.
Really?
Yeah.
We mixed it. We would do 2 or 3 days of lecture, and then 2 days at the hospital.
It was so nice because then we would go 8 months of no theory.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, that's pretty cool, though, immersion.
Harvard designed our program, actually.
No, they designed your program?
Yeah.
Get out of here. Have you? Yeah. No, not at all. Kidding. Yeah, who are they?
Harvard free plug. it's just unique because you talk to a lot of students that go to different schools, and sometimes they do theory 2 or 3 days a week and then clinical for 2 days a week or whatever the case is, and everyone gets something a little bit different. By the time we're in clinical and we maybe did that skill 4 or 5 months ago, maybe it's not as fresh as it would have been had we combined them as well too. So there's pros and cons to each study.
I know that physician assistants and even a lot of doctors do that. Do all lecture and then all clinical in one year, 2 year.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a student, you're not going to know everything. One of the best pieces of advice that I had when I first started my preceptorship is I had actually emailed the clinical nurse educator and I said, tell me all of the diagnosis and medications and surgeries that you guys do here. And it was quite the acute pediatric cardiac center, and we did heart transplants and we had ventricular assist devices. It was quite heavy. And she told me, don't worry so much on all of those things. Just know what normal is. And as you go, each day, learn 1 or 2 different things and learn as you go, rather than trying to memorize, 30 or 40 different
diagnostics
and surgeries. And that was a big piece of advice too. And it made me just realize, I felt like I could actually get in control. If I knew what normal was, I could identify what abnormal was when it was there, and be able to make that connection of what am I seeing, why am I seeing it, and what is the disconnect here too. And so I would always write down one or two things that I was unfamiliar with, whether it was medication, a diagnosis, a surgery, and then that night I would go and research it as well too, and then come back the next day with that knowledge as well.
Dang, that's really cool. Mm-hmm. I'd never seen that approach before, or heard that approach. Yeah. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Because I mean, like, I know they always say, like, how they train, like, the FBI to spot a fake dollar bill, mm-hmm. is they study the real dollar bill, like, really good, so that they can identify a fake.
Yeah.
So in the same way, like, you know what normal is, so that when something messes up, then you can understand the pathophysiology of mm-hmm. why it's messing
exactly.
up.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it makes sense.
Recommendation is actually making a schedule and writing things down. I'm a big believer that measure it, you can manage it. So if things are written down mm-hmm. on an hourly schedule for you, whether it's your medication, your NG feeds, your dressing changes, all those things, and you check them off mm-hmm. as your day goes on, like, you'll never forget anything.
Yeah, yeah. They call that a brain? Nurse brain? Or no?
On Epic?
No. We call it a brain. Like, well, there's like a little piece of paper you hold it, you bring around, and then there's actually like ones that are like on Pinterest that are really helpful.
I actually have a great one too.
Oh, okay.
So people at my old hospital used to ask me for it all the time. If I would have sold that thing for 5 cents, I would have like at least $3 right now. Like, that thing is flying off the shelf.
$3?
Yeah.
Dang,
yeah.
That's like
a half a dollar coffee general. In California. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was exactly it. So I would actually have the patient's name, who the doctor was, the diagnosis.
Yeah, perfect.
Post-op day, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, very important too, if your patient has allergies, that's obviously something you want to know before you
do anything. Much, yeah.
And then their code status too. So if they might be a DNR, that's something that you need to know.
Oh man, there's like a lot of stories about that.
Resuscitating people that weren't supposed to be or not.
Yeah, exactly. I had a patient expire on me one time, and then the other nurse is like, this is like a nursing home. They're like, I don't know what to do. I'm like, well, you can't really do anything. It's like a DNR.
Yeah, that's
so
tough.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of bad.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. But yeah, just a great way. So if you can measure it, you can manage it.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll never forget anything like that too. We are going to continue on here.
Yeah, our next thing.
Our next thing. Do you have any more clinical stories? What about something that went right in the clinical setting?
Oh, nothing went right. Trust me. No, I'm just kidding. The really cool one that went pretty good is just like, I love building a rapport with my patients or my mm-hmm. clients. So really kind of just being able to kind of look past all the diagnosis and mm-hmm. stuff and look at the person and mm-hmm. treat the person, right? Mm-hmm. So I had this this female patient who was like in her mid-20s who was there just to get like a ESR, I think it's called ESRP. Basically, they take a scope going through your stomach and look at your pancreas mm-hmm. and look at your gallbladder. And this entire diagnostic is notorious for causing pancreatitis. Mm-hmm. If you just touch the pancreas just a little bit or mess up that little bile duct or pancreatic duct, you can cause massive inflammation.
It's a huge high-risk procedure.
Oh my gosh, and it happens a lot. So she was in there, and she was like inside the hospital for 3 months or like 2 months. And obviously, you're getting a cabin fever. People can't even be quarantined for that long. Mm-hmm. Without like going crazy. So it was really cool to kind of like, you know, kind of chum it up with her. We were around the same age and just call our other clinical buddies in there and mm-hmm. just talk to her about like, you know, different current events on the same level.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool.
That's great. I have a tough clinical story for you.
Oh.
And it just speaks to the importance even as a student for advocating for your patients and making sure that you are able to speak up, because I know a lot of students feel like as a student nurse, you might not necessarily have that voice, but if you have that that gut feeling that something's not quite right, you really need to make a point of it too. So this was in a vascular surgery rotation that I had, and we had a patient that came in. He was in his late 50s, had a hiatus hernia repair. Not a huge procedure, but obviously one that's a higher risk for something like sepsis. Mm. And so when I had came on as a student nurse in the third year, I could see that his heart rate was climbing, his respiratory rate was climbing, his blood pressure was dropping, and he was becoming quite edematous. So immediately,
crap.
And his urine output's depleting too. So immediately I'm like, this guy's probably going septic. Like something is not quite right.
Yeah.
And so I remember I had asked, I said, look guys, like I think we need to, you know, probably send Stat Cultures, probably Yuri Kratin, and see what's going on with this patient.
Dang, look at
a lactate. And I think we need to start fluids and broad spectrum antibiotics. Like, this was straight from, like, I probably took the course like the week before.
Oh my gosh.
Hey guys, I just got off this published journal. But no,
I got a whole
checklist.
That's
one that I will always remember too, because.
So what happened? Like, the nurse didn't catch this?
So the nurse just felt that it wasn't as serious
as you were.
So
okay.
His urine output was just flirting with 30 mils an hour.
Yeah.
Output, and it was like, and his lactate was just under 4. And so if it was above 4, they take that as a septic protocol. And it was, I think, 3.6.
Okay. And, so he was getting
we
there.
We used different numbers and measurements in Canada, too. So sometimes specific lab values.
Yeah.
People in Canada want
to No, but we do the same thing. Like 30 mLs per hour. I always say 30 mLs per hour or less means the kidneys are in distress.
So I said, something's not quite right. They didn't start antibiotics, and they started fluids, thankfully. So I came back for my next shift the next day, and I saw that he had about 3 liters in and maybe just a few hundred mils out, like 200 or 300 in the entire day. And he was looking worse. You know, his level of consciousness, he just wasn't quite as alert and orientated, and he was like puffy. His blood pressure was dropping, heart rate, rest rate was going up. This is also someone who had some mental health issues as well too.
So he was on
benzo. So they were thinking that's affecting the blood pressure, his level of consciousness. He just had surgery. He's going to be in pain. That's the heart rate. But I'm like, no, something's not quite right. Like, his urine output should be higher, and he's filling with fluid. The fluid's not leaving. Something is not right. And I remember I went to like my clinical instructor. I said, I'm really worried about this patient. And she's like, I know. Yeah, me too. And so we went and we talked to the resident. The resident's like, yeah, we'll check in on him. Came by. Oh, he's fine.
Wow.
No, like something's not right. Like, we need to do something.
Dang.
And the next day, he coded and passed away.
No
getting
way.
Getting a renal ultrasound when they finally took a look at it. Yeah.
Oh my god.
I know.
Gosh.
It was. You feel like helpless as a student in a situation like that, where you feel like you know what the right thing is, and you, but just by sometimes just being in that position as a student, it's really tough. But I will say that if you have that feeling, you really have to, you really have to use your voice and.
Go with it.
It went, you know, we talked to the nurse, we talked to the resident, even went to the senior as well too, and it was a watch and see how things go. But it's a tough situation.
I think that's the hardest part that you're learning in nursing school, and even kind of when you're new in practice, is that you have a scope of practice and you can make recommendations, but it really is ultimately up to the healthcare provider to make the orders and determine the plan of care. And it's really frustrating sometimes, because you know, and you've probably seen multiple different patients kind of spiral, but your hands are kind of tied at the end of the day, and you can only do what you can do. So it's kind of really sad.
So what I wanted to do with my student nurse group as well too, there was 8 of us, is I went on after, because I think when you're so focused on, and this is a great reminder too for when you have a patient that's presenting with one diagnosis, is to be aware of all the other risk factors too. So for a hiatus hernia repair, sepsis is one of the risk factors too. Obviously you have a abdominal surgery.
You can get perfed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I decided to make these little cards that would go on the back of your name tag. And so I had the exact protocols, what you would look for vital signs, blood work for early signs of sepsis, and then what to do for management too. So obviously setting up your cultures, getting broad spectrum antibiotics, and then when those cultures come back 48 hours, then you would use more specific antibiotics, and you would have your fluids and everything that you would need to do for that.
You actually
too.
Made these cards?
I made them. So I just, and it was just for like my group.
Dang.
So my nursing instructor loved it, and she actually showed the clinical nurse educator on the floor. And now, so everyone in the OR and on that unit at that hospital has those name tags in the back of it, yeah.
And if you want to get your free name tag, you can
go
to...
It's a free name tag. I didn't make a dime off it. Yeah.
You can go to nursebrandon.com.
No, yeah. But you know what, though? It was, I felt so bad being with... And there's nothing I felt like more that I could do, but it was just, you know, a really tough situation, but trying to make it a learning one, too. So
making
in the
it better,
future...
Yeah.
Maybe this doesn't happen to anyone else, and just to help other students realize that this is the reality, that these things can happen, and just to really make sure you advocate for your patients and try and do everything you can for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the story of the medical field as well, to kind of bring it back in, is that you can get bitter or you can get better. And usually in the medical field, it doesn't really get better until something happens, which kind of is really sad. So And the same thing, like, you know, these like little clinical keychains wouldn't have happened, I don't think, as quickly or as highly adopted if something bad didn't happen. Yeah. And at the same time, Simple Nursing would have been created if something bad didn't happen to me. So, you know,
Simple Nursing got created.
Gotta get better.
I'll take my royalty check, thank you. Any other tips? Any other do's, don'ts in clinical? I think obviously you said down here too, especially dressing professionally, being appropriate, and social media is such a huge thing.
Oh, we just talked about this. Yes.
A nightmare story that I will share with you.
Go ahead.
Believe it, but just when you're posting things on the internet, make sure that you do not have any patient identifiers. Make sure that it can't be associated with your school or university.
Oh, yeah.
Just be professional, because there have been a lot of students in the past that have been expelled from a clinical setting too. So just conduct yourself in a professional manner is what I'll say.
Oh, man, yeah. Social media is the worst in the sense that, here's the deal. You have to put inside your mind that you represent your university. And your university is bidding for hospital positions with all these other colleges. So if you're the jerk or the idiot that messes it up for the entire school, the school's going to cut you first because they can't sacrifice this hospital thing. So just like we talked about, be on time, have everything overly prepared, never say you don't know.
Yeah.
Just do the best you can to be the best you can be, and don't try to draw attention to yourself like I did and be a mess up.
Have your materials too. I would say the last thing you want to do is be going to some people and asking, hey, do you guys have a pen?
Oh, that was me. Oh my gosh. I did everything worse.
I had so many pens on me. I had the pen light. I had like rolls of tape. Some people have like fanny packs now too. Like they're ready to go. Like I bet you can drop that person off in the middle of a forest. Like they'll make it.
Yeah.
They have like duct tape, scissors.
They have everything.
Band-aids.
Flushes.
Yeah, flushes. Yeah, yeah. Heparin, you know.
I would. One last thing. Okay, this is like a crazy story, but one of our friends in our first semester got kicked out of school, like entirely, like expelled, never able to come back, because he forgot to get some information for his care plan, which we had to write up like 15 pages. I don't know if you guys do care plans over
there. Yeah.
But anyways, he called the hospital after everyone was kind of like, basically after hours, like around midnight, and then tried to get in touch with the patient over the phone and was like, hey, I forgot to ask you these certain questions for my care plan. Can we just talk? So
that's like so inappropriate on so many levels.
But he was trying to go around the, what's it called? The operator by saying he was a family member
to get in touch.
To get directly to the patient.
I'm the father. You do not do that.
You are not the father.
Wow. And speaking on, confidentiality too.
Oh yeah.
If you have any sheets of paper or anything with a patient identifier, I couldn't tell you how many times I've seen people just throw it in the garbage. That has to go into an actual confidential disposal bin too. I've seen people actually get pulled into the dean's office or get in so much trouble because they just throw a medication with a label in the garbage. Like if anyone picks that up, if I had a child and those things were out there and someone put it on the internet, like I don't want people knowing that my child's been in hospital. Like that's very personal stuff, or
of course
for myself.
And HIPAA is such a huge thing in the States and definitely in Canada as well. But I think the hardest part is like becoming a new student nurse and knowing all these kind of like, you know, legal things and all these things that surround, because when you're just new to everything, you're just like, oh, I'm here to learn. But you don't understand, like, hey, you're a guest in someone's home.
Yes.
You're like in the hospital. You're not even a part of you're like represent the school. There's all these like back things that people don't even, they overlook.
Leave it better than when you arrive too. And just the tough reality is not everyone is always going to want a student.
Oh,
if
not
you go
at all.
Out of your way, that's a, yeah. Go out of your way to try and really make their lives easier, and you're friendly and engaged, and you introduce yourself to all the staff and to the patients and families, and you're changing out linen bags and doing little things, answering calls, you'll quickly become, you know, a great asset and someone that they want to have around too. But it can be busy having a student sometimes. That can it's a lot of teaching and things too. So just be mindful of that and do your best to make their lives easier too.
Oh yeah, it's all about just making everyone's life easier, being professional, and just act like you're a guest in someone's house. That's the thing. So that's pretty much it, right?
Yeah, I think that's great. This is episode 3.
Yeah.
We made it to 3.
We did it. We didn't get canceled yet.
none of the episodes of Job, but...
Okay, all right. Yeah, that's true.
Right. This is your host, Mike Linares. Hey, did I pronounce that right?
Yeah, you did pretty good. Brought to you by Holly Blue. And I'm Brennan. I'm just kidding, that's your part.
And I'm Brennan, the co-host of the brand new Holly Blue podcast.
Holly Blue. Yeah.
With Mike Linares. Stay safe, everyone. Stay connected. Download the Holly Blue app if you haven't already and connect with nearby nurses, events, groups, and professional opportunities in your area and all across the country. Everyone have a good night, and we will
we'll see them soon. Yeah, episode number 4 is coming down the pipe.
Yeah.
What do you think?
All right. Yeah, I'm excited. Ready to go.
All right, guys. See you guys next time.